You're listening to Feedback with Bill Saunders on News Talk 830 WEEU and 830WEEU.com. A new generation of talk.
Welcome to the Wednesday edition of Feedback, your on-air town square here on the Voice of Berks and Beyond, 830 WEEU. Good morning, everyone. I'm Bill Saunders, along with Sean Tansky. Our phone number is here, 610-374-8800, or toll-free if you're calling from out of the area. That's 888-401-0459. Our dedicated text line is 484-650-3373. And our email address here is feedback at 830WEEU.com. A lot to talk about today, so let's get started with today's top three topics. Turnout was extremely low for yesterday's primary election, and counties across the state encountered a number of mail-in ballot issues despite a revision in the law to make it easier. Also, President Biden is considering tapping the Strategic Petroleum Reserve once again. Yeah, you heard me right. To ease gas prices in an election year. And while New York prosecutors reveal a new charge in Donald Trump's hush money case, new information has emerged regarding his classified documents case. And we'll go over all that this morning. And with April being Sexual Assault Awareness Month, we'll be joined at 11 o'clock this morning by some folks from Safe Berks. That's an organization here in our area that helps victims of sexual abuse and domestic violence. All right, with that said, let's go over some of the unofficial election results from yesterday, since the final results are not yet in. Here's what we're finding. With nominees already essentially chosen for president, and not everyone is happy with them, and U.S. Senate and a general absence of passion, indications were that 70% or more of voters in the state decided this primary was not worth their trouble. Based on reports from polling places, Lauren Cristella, president and CEO of the Election Watchdog Group Committee of 70, said she expected final figures to show a super low turnout. Yeah, 70%, at least 70% of registered voters in the state stayed home. Didn't cast a vote at all yesterday. Here in Berks County, turnout was 20%. Now, let's take a look at each of the main races that took place yesterday. I'm not going to go through all of the local races for state Senate and state House. I'm just going to focus on the main races. Let's start with president. Both Democrat Joe Biden and Republican Donald Trump locked up their nominations, more than a month ago, actually. And they've trained their sights on our state, where the state's 19 electoral votes could decide the November election. But as Trump sat in a courtroom in Manhattan during the first criminal trial of a former president in U.S. history, some staunchly Republican voters told the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette yesterday that they could not vote for their party's standard bearer. One of them is Terry Bimley. He's 68 years of age from Bethel Park out there in the western part of the state. Here's what he told the Post-Gazette yesterday. I'm a pretty strong Republican, but it's hard to support Mr. Trump. Bimley instead cast his vote for Nikki Haley, the former South Carolina governor who suspended her campaign in early March, but who has become a vehicle for GOP voters to register their opposition to Trump in primaries that took place after she left the race. In the other party, the war between Israel and Hamas led to an organized push by some activists to persuade Democrats not to vote for Mr. Biden, though early returns showed far fewer protest votes against him than were cast in the GOP primary. Now in the U.S. Senate race, U.S. Senator Bob Casey Jr. faces perhaps the most formidable challenge in Republican nominee and former hedge fund CEO David McCormick. Like Casey, McCormick ran unopposed yesterday, sparing him an expensive and bruising primary fight like the one he narrowly lost to celebrity Dr. Mehmet Oz back in 2022. Dr. Oz, who was backed by Trump, later lost to Democrat John Fetterman. Abortion, the economy, immigration, and foreign policy, including support for Israel, have been major flashpoints in this Senate race, while Casey and McCormick both attempt to link each other to the unpopular figures topping the ticket, meaning Biden and Trump. All right, then there is the Attorney General race, and the results from that for yesterday showed that former Democratic State Auditor General Eugene DePasquale and Republican York County District Attorney Dave Sundy will face off in the race for State Attorney General this fall after winning their party's nominations yesterday. In the State Treasurer race, a former Allegheny County project manager yesterday upset the Democratic Party-endorsed candidate to win her party's nomination for state treasurer. Erin McClellan is her name. She was declared the winner over party-endorsed state representative Ryan Bizarro of Erie County. That according to the Associated Press. Bizarro was unopposed in the primary for the Democratic nomination for the House seat he's held for the past 12 years, though. McClellan will now take on Republican incumbent Stacey Garrity, who was unopposed for her party's nomination in November. Auditor General, Philadelphia Democratic state lawmaker Representative Malcolm Kenyatta, got past the primary challenger on Tuesday, positioning him to take on incumbent GOP State Auditor General Timothy DeFore in the November 5th election. Now, mail-in ballots. Yeah, the issue... How the state lawmakers tried to make it easier for mail-in balloting this time around, well, it seems to have backfired. Here's what they're reporting here. A design change that Pennsylvania officials made to prevent voters from making a disqualifying error on their mail ballots appears to have backfired on them. The issue, voters failing to write the final two digits of the year on the return envelope. What is this with people? I don't understand it. Oh, well, it's leading some counties to reject ballots in the primary, despite the state's new advice to count them. Last fall, the Pennsylvania Department of State announced it was redesigning the state's mail ballot return envelope, in part to reduce the number of ballots rejected for lacking a proper date, which is required by law. This year's envelope was has 20 pre-filled in the year line and leaves spaces for the voters to fill in the last two digits. So what's wrong with putting 24 there? I don't get it. One election director said a significant number of voters who returned flawed ballots had not filled in the last two digits of the year, and other election officials around the state echoed that observation. On the Friday before the election, Deputy Secretary for Elections Jonathan Marks sent out an email to all the counties advising them to count ballots, even if the envelope lacks the last two digits of the year. Here's what he wrote in his email. It is the department's view that if the date written on the ballot can reasonably be interpreted to be the day upon which the voter completed the declaration, the ballot should not be rejected as having an incorrect date or being undated. He was citing a 2022 Pennsylvania Supreme Court case. But the department's emailed advice does not carry the force of law, however, and counties are making different decisions about whether to count the ballots. So once again, we have issues regarding mail-in ballots. And I'm telling you, even though I am a firm advocate in making it easier for people to vote, I keep thinking back to the hanging chad issue in the Florida election of 2000. And the confusion that created, and that wasn't even a mail-in ballot we were talking about, but I keep thinking of that every time I hear about these mail-in ballot issues. And I'm left wondering, is it worth it? Maybe what we should do is just have our voting polls open for a week and let people walk in and cast their ballot. I mean, if you can go to the length of filling out a ballot and dropping it off of the mailbox, why not go to a polling place? It just doesn't make sense to me. Love to hear from you. 610-374-8800. Toll free, 888-401-0459. All right, on to other things here. I don't know about you, but in my career as a broadcaster, there are a number of radio stations I've worked at where they required me to fill in a non-compete, which meant that in the case of each radio station, I could not go to work for any other radio station that was in a 50-mile radius of the radio station's tower for a year. And I always found that to be unfair, to make it a full year. I mean, it prevented me from being able to pursue my career. Even if I got laid off, that non-compete was always there, and I couldn't pursue my career if I got laid off. And that happened to me several times. You know, in this business, you tend to get laid off when they change formats or what have you. That happens rather frequently in the broadcasting industry. But in my case, I've laid off five times in my career. But I always found non-competes to be unfair. And what really got me was that salespeople were not bound by those non-competes. We were talking about people who were privy to meetings where private information regarding the strategy, the marketing strategy of the radio station was always communicated. Those of us on air were not included in those meetings. We weren't privy to that information. But salespeople were. They knew exactly what the strategy was of the owner of the radio station and their strategies regarding getting advertising dollars and programming changes. And yet the salespeople who were privy to that information were not bound by a non-compete, so they could leave and go right to a competitor with that classified information. But those of us on-air people, we were bound by a different set of rules, even though we didn't, we weren't privy to that type of information. It just didn't make sense. Well, why am I going on about non-competes? It turns out the Federal Trade Commission has voted 3-2 yesterday to ban non-compete agreements. And apparently it prevents tens of millions of employees from working for competitors or starting a competing business after they leave a job, according to an article I saw on The Hill. From fast food workers to CEOs, the Federal Trade Commission, or FTC, estimates that 18% of the U.S. workforce is covered by non-compete agreements. About 30 million people, that turns out to be. The final rule would ban new non-compete agreements for all workers and require companies to let current and past employees know they won't enforce them. Boy, how I wish this rule was made when I did have a non-compete. Companies will also have to throw out existing non-compete agreements from most employees, although in a change from the original proposal, the agreements may remain in effect for senior executives. The new rule is slated to go into effect in 120 days after it's published in the Federal Register, but its future, according to The Hill, is uncertain. This, as pro-business groups opposing the rule are expected to take legal action to block its implementation. Business groups say non-compete agreements are critical for protecting proprietary information and intellectual property, although the rule would not ban other methods for protecting that information, including non-disclosure and confidentiality agreements. They also question the agency's authority to issue the blanket retroactive ban. Congress hasn't given the agency explicit authority to ban non-competes. Boy, how many times have we heard that in the 3 years that Mr. Biden's been in the White House and the agencies that report to him? How they're doing things without getting congressional approval. Now, there are a couple of bills, bipartisan bills, actually, that have introduced a reform for non-compete agreements, but they have not been passed. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce, that's the largest pro-business lobbying group in the country, has said it will sue to block this new rule. The chamber's president and CEO, Suzanne Clark, called the FTC vote to ban non-competes, quote, a blatant power grab that will undermine American businesses' ability to remain competitive. She went on to say, this decision sets a dangerous precedent for government micromanagement of business and can harm employers, workers, and our economy. She went on to say the chamber will sue the FTC to block this unnecessary and unlawful rule and put other agencies on notice that such overreach will not be, go unchecked. So I'd love to hear from you on this one as well, as far as non-competes are concerned. Again, our phone numbers here are 610-374-8800 or toll-free 888-401-0459. We'll take a break. We'll be back with more feedback in just a bit. Stay with us.
News you can use.
I feel more informed when I listen.
News Talk 830, WEEU.
The voice of Berks and Beyond.
Welcome back to Feedback on this Wednesday morning. You're on air Town Square here on the voice of Berks and Beyond, 830 WEEU. We're going to continue with feedback in just a bit, but right now we're going to talk with Kai Peterson, a physical therapist with South Mountain Physical Therapy. They have two locations, one at 4740 Penn Avenue in Sinking Spring, and the other in Leavesport at 1001 James Drive, Suite A14. Kay, good morning. How are you today? I said Kay. I meant Kai. I beg your pardon.
Sorry,
called worse. We're going to do something that I don't think we've talked about for quite a while, if at all, and that is South Mountain Physical Therapy in general, as opposed to looking at any one particular area and how physical therapy can help out. So let's talk about what are some of the conditions that you folks treat at your two locations.
Okay. I want everyone to know we have a total of 10 physical therapists. We have other physical therapy assistants and aides in both locations, and we can treat a variety of conditions. We're equally qualified at both locations to treat anything that comes along. So what we treat, I'll give you a list of some things that we do. So we treat a lot of people post-surgery, Bill, and that would include knee replacements, hip replacements, shoulder replacements, ankle replacements, ACL repairs, rotator cuff repairs, back and neck surgeries, bone fractures, carpal tunnel surgeries, amputation rehab for someone getting used to the new prosthetic limb. We treat all sorts of sports injuries, all kinds of joint sprains, ankle, knee, wrist, elbow, neurological problems like balance issues, vertigo, stroke, Parkinson's disease, ALS or Lou Gehrig's disease, multiple sclerosis, cerebral palsy, and brain injuries. We have a new pelvic floor therapist on board, so we treat both female and male conditions and see a lot of back and neck pain, general conditioning problems, workman's comps. We get people back to work. So those are some of the issues that we see and treat, Bill.
And share with us, how long has South Mountain Physical Therapy been in business, and how many therapists, physical therapists, are on your staff?
All right. I started the business back in 16 years ago. And we've got a new location in Leesport, just about 3 years old there. And we have 10 PTs on board, including myself, Dan, Kathleen, Tim, Asa, Amber. And at Leesport, we have Justin, Cody, Karen, and Colleen.
And do you accept insurance? And if so, what insurances do you take?
We take most any insurance, Bill. And we also have direct access certified physical therapists on board. So we can treat anyone without a referral up to 30 days. So we get people started and then get a referral from the physician if it's going to go longer than 30 days.
So it makes it convenient. Somebody doesn't have to go see their doctor first before they can come to you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what else can you tell us about South Mountain Physical Therapy?
Well, both locations are first floor access, Bill. So there's easy parking, ramps to get in and out for wheelchairs, walkers, and so forth. We have front office staff that actually answer the phone. So if you call, you'll get an actual person on the phone. None of this funny phone business at all. And if it's busy, leave a message. We'll call you right back. We'll get people in for their first appointment within 48 hours. We offer a free 15-minute consultation if you have a question about an issue that you have and whether or not your physical therapy would be helpful for you. We start our appointments at 7 a.m. The last one's at 6 p.m. Monday through Friday.
And before I ask you for a phone number and location of the two offices again, Is there anything else that you wanted to share with us about the business in general?
Well, just the fact that it's kind of a fun place. Both places, we get to know people, and we have a good time, and do our best with the issues, and we work with people with them to get them on a home exercise program. So the idea, Bill, is to work with people and get them along and give them exercises to do at home so they really don't need us anymore. That's what we're trying to do. You don't need to keep coming back and coming back unless you've got another issue. But that's the thing. We work together as a team. We find out what people like to do, what their interests are, what they want to get back to doing, and we do our best to get them back to the life they want to be living.
What I also like about South Mountain Physical Therapy, Kai, is the regular newsletter that goes out and your informative website, too. You want to talk briefly about that?
Well, check out our website. It's got kind of a bio on all our staff, but also you can research all types of injuries or problems or surgeries on there and arm yourself with more information about it.
All right, and share with the folks the two locations and phone numbers for people
all
to
right,
get in touch with you.
Spring. We're in the Thinking Spring Plaza across from Poplawski between Tractor Supply and Dollar Tree, and that's 4740 Penn Avenue. The phone number there is 610-927-5183. And our newer location is Leesport. We're behind the Wawa that's at the corner of 183 and Leesport Road, and there's a business park back there, and our address is 1001 James Drive, Suite A14, and that phone number is 484-671-2065.
Kai Peterson of South Mountain Physical Therapy. Kai, thank you for checking in today. Love it. Love the information you shared today.
You bet, Bill.
All right, you take care. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
And we'll be back with more feedback and your calls when feedback continues in just a bit. Stay with us.
Serving Collegeville, North Wales, King of Prussia, and all of Montgomery County. This is News Talk 830 WEEU.
The voice of Berks and Beyond.
Welcome back to Feedback here on The Voice at Berks and Beyond, 830 WEEU, where again our phone numbers here are 610-374-8800 or toll-free 888-401-0459. And before the break, we were talking about non-competes, and Bob in West Lawn wants to weigh in on that. Bob, good morning. Welcome to Feedback.
Good morning, Bill. Thanks for the opportunity and appreciate your program. Long-time listener.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
With the non-competes, my experience mostly is in the medical field. And what I've seen is the hospitals are huge anymore. They dominate market. Their imprint on the market is pretty dominant. And they go out and either take the private doctors under an employment agreement with a non-compete, or they simply say, hey, we're just going to bring in other doctors to compete with you because we got the market power and you don't. I've seen that hamstring a number of doctors at that point who might want to try working for the hospital, decide they don't like it, wasn't all it was cracked up to be, and they want to go back to private practice. And normally when we see the non-competes, there's two major factors to it. The time duration, 6 months or a year, is probably going to be enforced. Once you get over 2 to 3 years, then maybe not so much, a little draconic. As far as distance, you're looking at maybe the contiguous counties where an employer is located, and outside that area, that market area, it really doesn't matter. So, but I was surprised to hear. Understand, Pennsylvania is basically an at-will state.
Right.
You don't have a right to your job for the most part still, although there's many states that, yeah, you do have a right to your job, but Pennsylvania's not one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And so looking at business necessity, I'm surprised to hear in your situation that you described that you had one, but the salespeople didn't, and I would have thought maybe that's exactly the opposite because with technology today, you could be living in Canada and have the job you have today, basically, but salespeople couldn't. And I'm thinking if you own a car dealership, you certainly don't want your salespeople developing a Rolodex of customers and then leave you and be able to take that with them, go down the street and start selling Buicks instead of Hondas or something. So I see a business necessity for it, and the employer normally provides in an employment agreement some kind of quid pro quo that says, hey, we want to have this non-compete for 2 years and 50 miles, and for that, here's a hiring bonus for the length of the employment contract. Kind of, so it's a give and take a little bit. And if you're fired, I think the courts, traditionally, the judge would say to the employer, hey, you didn't want them anyway. They were a bum. You fired them. So I guess we're not going to enforce that non-compete if they were that bad. So there's a lot of issues with it, but overall, I think it's just common sense and business necessity that have to be brought to bear. As far as NDAs go, they tend to be weak and difficult to enforce, and it's just hard to prove that some confidential information was somehow released by one party or another. So anyway, those are some points I just wanted to bring up in the in the discussion of them. They're necessary. I see their reason for them, but in a lot of cases, they throw the baby out with the bathwater.
Bob, thanks for weighing in. I appreciate it.
Well, you're welcome. Thanks so much, and I'm anxious to hear what other callers have to say.
All right, buddy. You enjoy your day, okay?
You too, Bill. Thank you.
All right, bye-bye now. Let's go to Wyomissing. John wants to weigh in on something we were talking about on Monday. John, hi. Welcome to Feedback today.
Hey, Bill. Hi, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you doing this morning?
Great. Hey, and at least now with respect to non-competes, you know, I've kind of been a corporate guy for a while, but pretty much my entire professional career. I've worked for corporations that required me to hire non-competes and, you know, managing people throughout the years, trying to bring talent onto my team. I just think these non-competes are baloney, right? I've had so much trouble over the years, and I think it really hamstrings people who, you know, when you work in industries that are kind of small and specialized, you know, saying that you can't compete with our competition, well, maybe there's only two other people. So now what, you're just kind of stuck where you are because of the, I think they give too much power to the corporation, essentially. So I'm all for abolishing those. But I did want to address our conversation from Monday, Bill, because I had asked you on Monday, and I was waiting in that final hour, I'd asked you, do you think that Donald Trump should pay a price for his actions after the 2020 election? And I don't know if you addressed it on Monday, but I did listen to the show yesterday, and I think you did address it yesterday. And I just got to say one shout out. I think it's Zach the one putting the shows into podcast format.
What's that now?
Is Zach the one who's putting your shows into podcast format?
Who's Zach? Do you mean sure. Sean?
Sean.
Sean,
sorry.
My producer? Yeah. Sean.
Yeah, sorry.
Yes.
Well, he's doing a great job, and I think that is just such a great resource. I love getting the ability to go back and listen to the show again when I, you know, when I kind of have been listening on it with other things happening, right? But today you're lucky. I'm not working, and I get to give you my full attention here. So I think what you said essentially was that it seems like, you know, Dems are piling it on. They're trying to essentially use lawfare to prevent Trump from winning in 2020. And I guess, you know, I was a little struck by your conversation after the John Meacham discussion yesterday. You called him a snob because he said that there's a patriotic element to this election. And
no, I was referring to his comment that he made about his fellow Tennesseans.
Okay. I thought you were referring to the fact that he thinks that Joe Biden is a patriotic choice.
No. I was referring to the comment that he made about Tennesseans, and it was him looking down his nose at the Tennesseans. I didn't appreciate what he had to say.
No, it sounded to me like he said, my friends are Republicans because I live in Tennessee, and that's, you know, most of the people that are in Tennessee are Republicans. Regardless, you know, part of patriotism is not just loving your country, it's loving your fellow countrymen. And the thing that I struggle with so much as somebody who supported Joe Biden, who will support Joe Biden again, is does it mean nothing that Donald Trump tried to disenfranchise 80 million people? And did he not try to steal the 2020 election? Or are we all just kind of pretending that January 6th was was it a coincidence that that protest happened to be happening when they were certifying the 2020 election? I hear you repeating talking points sometimes, and I know you like to pretend that you're playing down the middle, but yesterday you mentioned...
Well, first of all, I'm not pretending I'm down the middle. I am down the middle. I'm just pointing...
So then you said yesterday that you've never heard, and one of these talking points that I'm referring to, you compared January 6th to the George Floyd protest, which I think is a false comparison, but fair enough, you can make it. And you said, I've never heard a Democrat condemn the George Floyd protest. Well, I just sent you the statement that Joe Biden released, you know, weeks after the George Floyd protest, in which he said, you know, you can protest police brutality. That's right, and it's necessary, but you cannot destroy. You cannot be violent. Violence that endangers lives is not right. Violence that guts and shutters businesses that serve our community is not right. So when you say those things, you say you're playing it down the middle, but then you're repeating these talking points that, you know, things like Democrats don't support Israel. Democrats regret electing John Fetterman. These are themes that come up over and over from you. And
When did I ever say the Democrats regret voting for John Fetterman?
You like to bring him up, and you love to.
No, I'm asking you this question. No, John, answer my question directly. The question you just said, I have said that Democrats regret voting for John Fetterman. When did I say that?
This was weeks ago, Bill, and you were talking about his support for Israel, and you said something along the lines of, you know, I bet there's folks that...
Oh, something along the lines of, but I did not...
But I didn't. You definitely said yesterday, then. You definitely said yesterday, Democrats never condemned the George Floyd protest.
This is true.
And the op-ed that I just read from you, are you saying that I'm lying now?
If you'll let me finish here... If Joe Biden made that claim, I never heard it. I never heard it.
Well, I sent it.
I never heard. You may have sent it to me. I haven't seen it, John. If I could finish my two thoughts, just let me get two sentences out. At the time of the George Floyd protest, I never heard any Democrat make any comment about the violence that took place. Nothing. So if you're saying that Joe Biden said something, I'll go back and read what you sent to me. I haven't seen what you sent to me yet.
Love to hear you correct yourself on the air that one.
Well, we'll see if I have to correct myself.
Yeah, you will. Trust me.
All right.
And then again,
but I'd like to see you. I'd like to see you correct yourself about saying what by putting words in my mouth. That I ever said that Democrats regret voting for John.
I did not bring the receipts on the John Fetterman statement. I'll admit that.
All right.
Now,
is that an apology?
I'm really looking. Yes, I'm sorry. I did not mean to imply that. But that's just, you know, that's like my impression.
I'm just teasing with you.
I love John Fetterman. I am so happy that he's our senator. And I'm happy and proud to have voted for him despite the flack that was given to his supporters on your station for years.
Yeah, and I've said repeatedly on this show that I've had a change of heart about John Fetterman. I've said that.
I love that. Yeah, and I think we're centrists, right? I really do. We don't agree on everything, but we're centrists. And, you know, that's why I'm trying to reel you in when you say things like, I've never heard a Democrat condemn the George Floyd protest. I just think it's a false equivalency when you're talking about a protest that invaded the Capitol and virtually shut down the election, the transfer of power, right? I mean, there's a little bit of a difference between protests in the street that happened organically and all of the things that happened after January 12th.
The pressuring
of people in Georgia.
All right.
And I don't care about the New York trial. I agree with you. I think it's probably more politically motivated than anything else. But at the same time, Donald Trump reaps what he sows. He is not innocent of these crimes that he's been accused of in many cases, right? If he wasn't out there grabbing women and defaming them and, you know, doing all these things, years and years of just fraudulent business practices, he wouldn't be in this pickle. He wouldn't have all these targets on him. But he made those choices, and now he's got to defend himself in court.
What were your thoughts of Bill Clinton during the Monica Lewinsky situation?
So I'll confess, I never voted for Bill Clinton. I was young back then. I was never old enough to vote for Bill Clinton. Back then, I was kind of young and dumb and probably thought it was like, not that the hookup thing was cool, but didn't bother me as much, but now, you know, especially in light of what happened with, you know, essentially the way that we're perceiving men and women and those relationships and the dynamics of power, it's gross. I don't like Bill Clinton that much. I don't like Hillary Clinton that much, right? But well, we are where we are.
Well, right? The bottom line with me is I don't prefer either one of these two candidates running for president, and I've said that on this show.
But one of them attacked our country and tried to disenfranchise me and 80 million of your fellow Americans. And if you are a patriot and if you love your fellow Americans, you wouldn't be trying to put that guy back in office. That's my take.
And I'm not trying to put him back in office. All I'm trying to show.
You're okay. You're helping, right?
All right.
you got your 20,000 watt antenna that you're talking into while you get your message out there.
But that's only if I get my words in. John, thank you. Appreciate your comments today.
Yeah.
All right.
Cheers.
Bye-bye now.
Go Sixers.
All right, John. And I welcome anybody else who wants to call in. Please, if you also heard Joe Biden or any other Democrat condemn the violence that took place during the George Floyd episode, please let me know. I mean, I'd love to stand corrected on that one. I personally never heard anything from any of the Democrats. I heard a lot from Republicans, but not from the Democrats. All right, let's talk about the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. Do I have time for this one? I was shocked when I saw this in the Washington Examiner. Sean Derns has written a piece with the headline, Biden Must Not Tap the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. Now, Derns is a Washington-based foreign affairs analyst, and here's what he had to write in the Washington Examiner. The Biden administration is reportedly considering tapping the Strategic Petroleum Reserve to counter rising gas prices this summer. Such a move would set a bad precedent, Mr. Derns writes. The SPR exists for reasons of national security, not political convenience. Vikas Dewaldi, a global oil and gas strategist, told Bloomberg that the White House might turn to the SPR to offset an expected spike in gasoline prices during the summer. Dewaldi said the following, there are not many tools available to stave off price increases. The analyst noted that turning to the country's emergency reserves is one of the most effective ways to limit the pain that consumers might feel at the pump. And the president knew that in 2022 when he tapped into the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. Back to Mr. Derns' piece. It is normal for gas prices to increase during the summer, a peak driving season, but it isn't normal to turn to the SPR to keep prices down in an election season. In November of 2021, the Biden administration turned to the SPR to offset rising gas prices ahead of the holiday season, a move that House Republicans condemned. The SPR was established in 1975 when President Gerald Ford signed the Energy Policy and Conservation Act into law. At the time, the United States was facing mounting energy crises. The SPR was created to reduce the impact of disruptions in supplies of petroleum products and to carry out national obligations under the International Energy Program. As the Department of Energy notes, the SPR's sheer size, with an authorized storage capacity of 714 million barrels, makes it a significant deterrent to oil import cutoffs and a key tool to foreign policy. The latter phrase is key. The SPR exists for crises. It does not exist to stave off electoral defeat. Indeed, unnecessarily relying on the SPR for domestic political concerns is dangerous, Mr. Derns writes. As its name implies, the federally owned oil stocks are reserves, and they should be treated as such, used only when necessary. Well, it goes on, but I do want to point this out because I'm running out of time. Earlier this month, now this is not Derns' part, this is some research that I did after I read this article. Earlier this month, the U.S. canceled the purchase of about 3 million barrels of oil for the SPR due to rising prices, and it slowed down the pace of replenishment after a historic sale from that emergency stockpile that occurred back in 2022. Again, when the president used that to help make it easier for his Democrats to get elected in 2022. The reserve currently holds about 362 million barrels. Now, what did I say earlier? It is designed to hold 714 million barrels, but right now it's holding only 362 million barrels. Stocks in the reserve stood at 565 million barrels before the president had his sale in March of 2022. So you can see we're even a far way down from where we were before the president initiated that sale in March of 2022. And what is he doing? Again, he wants to make this election easier for Democrats and himself in particular by lowering that price of gasoline because it's edging oh so closer to that $4 mark. I welcome your take on that. We'll be back with more feedback in just a bit. Stay with us.
I waited till I saw the sun.
Serving Bethel, Hamburg, Birdsboro, and all of Berks County, this is News Talk 830 WEEU.
And now back to feedback with Bill Saunders on 830 WEEU, the voice of Berks and beyond.
Stay with us. Coming up during the 11 o'clock hour, I'll be joined by some folks from Safe Berks, an organization that helps victims of sexual abuse and domestic violence, as April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month. That's coming up during the 11 o'clock hour here on Feedback. I agree with John in Wyomissing. Go Sixers. I'm not happy about the calls that were made. Well, we won't get into that. Stay with us. We'll be back in just a bit. Welcome back as we kick off hour number two of Feedback, your on-air town square, here on the voice of Berks and Beyond, 830 WEEU. Good morning, everyone. I'm Bill Saunders, along with Sean Tansky. And our phone numbers here are 610-374-8800, toll-free 888-401-0459. And our dedicated text line is 484-650-3373. And our email address is feedback at 830weeu.com. Marie in Reading has been waiting oh so patiently through the news break, and I appreciate that. Thank you so much, Marie. Good morning.
Well, good morning, Bill. Here I am, the second day that I'm able to call in, and I was able to hold. So I appreciate your indulgence yesterday when I kind of got over-enthusiastic. I really thought I could get all my thoughts out, and I realized after I hung up, I'm like, I had just too much on my plate to talk about. So I'll try not to be so darn aggressive today. So,
so what's on your mind today?
Well, this isn't the main reason I called, but I wanted to comment on the topic of the Democrats condemning the George Floyd rioting. So many of them, the liberal media included, called them the Summer of Love. And then we had Vice President Harris, or was she not the vice president yet? I guess she wasn't the vice president
No.
And I apologize for my loss of time here, time frame. But she was raising money for bail to get these rioters out of jail. And I myself, and this is myself talking, do not recall hearing any mainstream lit media or the mainstream Democrats that usually get the microphone speaking out against the riots. Now, like you said, maybe you just didn't hear it, but I also didn't hear it.
Now, let me ask you, let me stop you. Let me stop you there. Where did you hear that? Because I hadn't heard this one either, that Senator Harris at the time was collecting or trying to get bail money for these. For the people. Where did you hear that?
And I will have to refer back to Fox News that, and I can research it and send it to you, Bill, because I know there are some out there who are going to say, oh, well, she didn't mention her source. Well, I'm not making it up. I am simply saying it was that long ago that I forget, but I'm going to get to the bottom of it, and I will send it to you, Bill.
Okay.
I give you my word. And I also wanted to discuss the rest of my topic that I had yesterday. I believe on Friday, your last caller of the day called out Donald Trump, stating the worst lie of the century that he made was that the judge wouldn't let him attend his son's graduation. Well, if that's the worst lie, I beg to differ, because the judges wouldn't. The judge on one of the other cases, and it might have been the other, Harris, Jean Harris, or whatever her name is.
E. Jean Carroll.
And I apologize, I don't know. That he wasn't even allowed to attend his wife's mother's funeral. So the fact that he was speaking out against it, I think he was looking for public support to try to get him the ability to go to his youngest and probably his last child's graduation. And I think that is despicable.
Well, so, let me ask you this, Marie, and playing devil's advocate with you. Would you agree with me that a lot of these comments that Donald Trump is making is an attempt to make political points?
I don't know about political points. I think it's an attempt to get his message out there, because the media does not cover him when he gives speeches and stuff at his campaign events. They conveniently mute it. They do not acknowledge that he's even making speeches. So this is his way of getting some on-air time. I don't necessarily agree with it. I do not. I want to go on record as saying I do not agree with everything this man does. I am not a. I guess I'm a MAGA sort of. I'm a sort of MAGA.
There's a new term.
I'm not a full-blown MAGA Republican. I try to be more moderate. But when some of these outrageous things are happening, I cannot help but get emotional about it. Because when you talk about lies, how about the lie that they signed that letter? There were like, 8 to 10 former liberal cabinet members, attorneys general or whatever, signed a letter that Hunter Biden's laptop was Russian disinformation. And Biden used that on the debate stage with Trump. Now, if you want to talk about lies, that is the whopper of the century. And then they were called out on it, and they admitted they lied. And nothing was done. So when I say I'm more moderate, and I believe the liberal media should be more moderate in reporting on these things and backtracking and retracting stories that they claim are like the Bible. They're like God's word, that Hunter Biden's laptop was Russian disinformation, and it has turned out to all be lies. The Russian collusion, Hillary Clinton's, the dossier was proven to be lies. But what is done about that? What's done about all that stuff? And that's where I have a problem, where the law is not evenly applied. They are trying their best to keep Trump from campaigning. That's what they're doing. I think anybody that's being honest would say they're trying to prevent him from campaigning for president. And they're doing a heck of a job, Bill. And I'll just say, when Trump makes these statements, it's his way of trying to stay relevant out there in the media, because they're holding him hostage in these courtrooms. And these are trumped up charges that I will say maybe in a year or two, maybe eventually we'll find out the honest to goodness truth, but nobody's going to retract it. There's nothing going to be done.
Well,
and that's where I get frustrated. That's where I get frustrated.
Marie, Pat from Moton heard what you said on the air, and he texted me a few things regarding Kamala Harris and a fund that she set up. One is a Facebook post, which I'm going to ignore because a lot of times those can be fabricated. But he did follow up with a Fox News article dated August of 2022. And I only have the headline from the article that he sent me. But it says, Minnesota bail fund promoted by Kamala Harris freed convict now charged with murder. So there's the proof that what you were saying earlier about Ms. Harris.
Thank you to Pat, because that to me is totally outrageous what went on there. Those rioters were storming the courthouse out in Oregon or Washington. And when Trump wanted to call in the National Guard, well, they all put their arms up. No way can you do this. He was protesting the federal courthouse, and they would not even agree to the National Guard there. So he wanted to call the National Guard out on January 6th, and they nixed that. They didn't even respond. They didn't even do anything. But Trump is responsible for people going overboard with their enthusiasm. What the heck? They went overboard
right.
with
all right.
your
all right, you're going over now. Day. You're going over now, Marie.
Okay. I apologize.
No need to apologize. There are times I got to rope people in when they go over the 5-minute mark.
I know. And I kind of get a little bit of overexcited, so I apologize. There.
No,
have
again,
a good day, Bill.
No need to apologize. Thanks for calling in, Marie. Bye-bye now. And I want to thank Patton in Moton and Sue in Schwanksville for texting me information in support of what Marie said regarding Kamala Harris getting contributions to raise bail money for people involved in the George Floyd protest. All right, let's go back to the phones. A couple of other people have been waiting for quite a while to get on, like William in Boyerstown. William, good morning. Welcome to Feedback.
Good morning. With $95
You keep dollars. You keep moving around, William. Now you're in Boyertown today.
That's right. I'm down here today letting them know how happy it is.
All right, okay, so you wanted to talk about the foreign aid bill?
Right. $95 trillion. And not one for anybody in America. They talk about the homeless. Nothing. The Vietnam vets, and I do say Vietnam vets because I'm one who had Asian arms dropped on it. Never fully compensated. Nothing. But we can get $95 trillion away to two foreign countries. And nothing for the people in America. What am I missing here? Explain to me exactly what am I missing.
Well, what do you think you're missing?
Nothing. We are the banks for every other country in this world, but we can't even clean up our own act. We got people in the government, all forms of government. If you don't cut your grass right, they will arrest you. If you don't have your house right, they will arrest you. If you can't afford to cut your grass or if you can't afford to do your house, they will still arrest you.
Arrest you or fine you?
They can arrest you and fine you and put you to jail. But yet, we can't get no help for people that actually need it. People are losing a home because they can't afford to pay the taxes because they just don't have the money no more. We have vets that need proper care and it's not being given. We have all kinds of things wrong in this country. And $95 trillion and nothing written in it for anybody in America.
And I'm surprised you didn't mention this, William. I'm surprised you didn't mention this. Now there are some liberal cities out there that have had a homeless problem for quite a while, and their way of solving it is to fine the people who are homeless. People who don't have enough money to put a roof over their heads, they want to fine them now because they're marking up the streets there in Los Angeles or some city in Oregon, Portland, for instance.
Well, what I think they ought to do is put them all in jail. Throw up the jail because now you gave them a home. Now they'll be taken care of at our expenses. Well, put them in the jail for them to get what they need. That's the American way.
Now, of course, you're joshing there. You don't mean that seriously, right?
No, I definitely mean it. If you can't get no money on the other way to get fixed up, get yourself put to jail. They'll take care of you. Look, if you need a, just for the heck of this, I'm just saying this to you. Let's say you need a heart transplant and you can't afford it. Go rob a bank.
All right.
They put you in federal prison. Guess what? You'll get your operation then.
Okay.
Isn't that a shame you got to do that in this country?
So are you against all foreign aid?
Well, listen, You're never going to end foreign aid because you have to give it. But a lot of these countries have been blood-sucking off of us for a long, 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 long time, and it never the bill never stops. If you already look at what you gave to the country in the war, the federal government could have written out a check probably for everybody in this country, a check for $2 million apiece. And when the war is over, and it will get over one day, will they allow us to go there for free vacations? Will they pay us our money back? What are we going to get for the trillions of dollars that we dumped into this thing? I don't know. Nobody's saying nothing. They do say to stop communism. Well, you know, they said the same thing in Vietnam. You know what happened there. They said the same thing in South Korea. You know what happened there. It came to a stalemate. But yet we dump into these things. Iran and that. Look what's happening over there. How much money is being dumped there. And they pussyfooted around. You see it every day of the week. You read it. Nothing's being done. But we can't help this country here. Our country dumped chemical agents on Vietnam troops who have all kind of complications due to it, and they're not really fully compensated at all. They ignore it. You know why? Because they weren't there, a lot of them. They don't experience that.
All right, we'll have to end it.
People are homeless.
All right, we'll have to end it there.
That's okay. You think about what I'm saying to you. Have a good day.
All right, William, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. All right, let's go to Wommelsdorf and Ed. Ed, good morning. Welcome to Feedback.
Good morning. There's three things I remember very distinctly about the riots of 2020. One, that's either the mayor or the governor of the state told the police to stand down in Ferguson and let the people riot because they just rebuild afterwards because they didn't want to cause any other problems. Two, if anything was an insurrection, it was the two cities that they took over blocks of and held for a couple weeks, not just a couple hours. And three, there was multiple cities that would riot after every incident until you gave the poll that said that the voters were holding the Democrats responsible and not not Trump. And then all of a sudden, there was an incident in Philadelphia, and we heard it for 24 hours, and it was done. And there was no other city that didn't got involved in it. So, I mean, if you want to talk about a thing that was an insurrection, those riots were just more of an insurrection than January 6th.
Well, Ed, thanks. I appreciate you sharing that with us. Anything else you wanted to say?
No, that's it.
All right, buddy. Appreciate you holding on. You were on hold for quite a while. I appreciate your patience.
Well, you have a great day.
You too now. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
Bob in Leesport, I'll be with you in a bit. We got to take care of a little bit of business first before we continue with this Wednesday edition of Feedback. Stay with us.
Serving Paoli, Glenmore, Coatesville, and all of Chester County, this is News Talk 830 WEEU.
And now back to Feedback with Bill Saunders on 830 WEEU, the voice of Berks and Beyond.
Welcome back to Feedback on the voice of Berks and Beyond, 830 WEEU, where our phone numbers right now are 610-374-8800 or toll-free, 888-401-0459. Let's head to Leesport and speak with Bob this morning. Bob, good morning. Welcome to Feedback.
Hey, good morning. Pleasure to talk with you.
Same here, buddy.
Hey, I like the things that Irene was bringing up just a while ago, and I also like that piece that you read from Andy McCarthy the other day explaining how Alvin Bragg's case against Trump is always portrayed in the media as a, quote, hush money case in order to make it sound more sinister, you know. But by the way, Stormy Daniels did break that nondisclosure agreement for which she had been paid $130,000 in order to make more money from the scandal publicity and a book deal. And Trump claims he never had an affair with the porn star. I mean, whether you want to believe that or not, it's out there. Stormy Daniels signed a letter in 2018 admitting as much. Here's what the letter said. To whom it may concern, over the past few weeks, I have been asked countless times to comment on reports of an alleged sexual relationship I had with Donald Trump many, many, many years ago. The fact of the matter is that each party to this alleged affair denied its existence in 2006, 2011, 2016, 2017, and now again in 2018. I am not denying this affair because I was paid hush money, as has been reported in overseas-owned tabloids. I'm denying this affair because it never happened, and I will have no further comments on this matter. But she did comment further to Anderson Cooper on 60 Minutes in August of 2018. So Anderson Cooper asked her, so you signed and released a statement that said, I'm not denying this affair because I was paid in hush money. I'm denying it because it never happened. That's a lie. Stormy Daniels. Yes, Cooper. If it was untruthful, why did you sign it? Daniels. Because they made it sound like I had no choice. Cooper. I mean, no one was putting a gun to your head. Daniels. Not physical violence. No, Cooper. You thought that there would be some sort of legal repercussion if you didn't sign it? Daniels, correct. As a matter of fact, the exact sentence used was, they can make your life hell in many different ways. Cooper, they being who? Daniels, well, I'm not exactly sure who they were. I believe it to be Michael Cohen. And there was more to the conversation, but there you have it, the ever-changing world of Stormy Daniels. Regarding non-disclosure agreements, they are legal. But Alvin Bragg is trying to claim that Trump is guilty of hiding the truth in order to influence the 2016 election. The truth, mind you, in this matter seems to be a debatable issue. Trump could argue he was trying to hide a lie, which he knew the liberal press would gladly exploit before the election. Nevertheless, Alvin Bragg is obsessed with the truth, as you can tell. He knows how, if hidden, the truth can affect an election. Let me give Alvin some other examples, as Irene already did, to help in his quest for justice. For example, the truth that Biden was trying to hide in 2020 when he lied on a nationally televised debate before the election about the existence of Hunter Biden's incriminating laptop, or like the truth that the Steele dossier about Russia collusion of Trump was really a Hillary Clinton paid for lie. Those are just some of the cover-ups that really did threaten democracy. But Democrats are never accused of sinisterly influencing anything. They can bleach, bit, and destroy classified emails and never face a charge. You know, I can understand why Alvin Bragg is so concerned about the truth, but for the life of me, I can't understand why Donald Trump is the only one who ever stands trial.
Well, let me ask you a question here. As I recall, back in 2016, as she was running for president, there was at least one incident that Hillary, you might recall this, where she was being escorted back to her car, and she looked like she was about ready to pass out.
Right.
Remember that?
Yeah, I do.
Did we ever hear anything from the media as to what that was all about?
No, I guess not. I don't even recall. It didn't seem like a big deal at the time, except that, you know, health may have been an issue. She may have been dehydrated. Who knows? I really don't know.
Yeah, but she was running for president.
Yeah.
It could have been a serious health. It could have been. All right. People who are out there marking every word I said could have been a major health issue, and she's running for president. Is that not interfering with an election by suppressing information on that?
Well, that's a good, hey, you know, I never thought of it that way. But, yes, of course, the press always, they try and manipulate the stories and kill them. I know yesterday they were talking to that, was it Dave Pecker, the guy who was in charge of the National Enquirer, and they made a big deal. Like, oh, they tried to suppress or they tried to push certain stories and suppress others. It happens all the time.
Yeah, like, I mean, let's talk about Hunter Biden and his laptop, for Pete's sake.
Really, exactly. They do it all the time. I mean, it's... what this looks like a two-tiered justice system. It looks like, you know, one party is brought up on charges, the other one skates free. I mean, how else could you explain a fat little city prosecutor being allowed to take an expired local misdemeanor charge and making a federal case out of it? I mean, that just is not only illegal, it's malpractice. It's selective prosecution to destroy a political opponent, and that's as un-American as any crime in our country, which believes in a Republican form of government, a Democratic elected form of government.
All right, we'll leave it at that.
Okay.
Bob, thanks for the call today.
Surely. Right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye now. Let's go to Shellington and speak with Matt today. Matt, good morning.
Good morning to you, Bill. First, boy, the great discussions going on today. I think it's a classic example. You know, the rule that they told us for the 21st century, Bill, it's not important that you know the answer. What's important is that you know how to find the answer. And, yes, I agree. When I heard Marie say about Kamala Harris and the bail, I had vague memories of that. But, yeah, it was a couple of years ago, so I couldn't zoom in on it. But, fortunately, we had listeners, callers who did check it out and provide it. And so that's why this is so darn good, this show, Bill. The notion of, I consider it, as I told you, continuing adult education. And, yes, over the years, I've heard you say, I stand corrected. And that doesn't mean, oh, you're wrong, you don't know what you're... It means you were provided information that you didn't know about, and therefore you have made an informed decision. That's what this show, I found, is all about. If you get new information, you have to either now rethink your current position, if not actually change it. And I'm sort of happy to tell you, during the course of 15 years, I've changed my view on one issue because of new information, and that is now I don't have any trouble supporting any voter ID law proposal. For this reason, I remember 15 years ago, there was evidence that some senior citizens living in inner cities indeed would not have access to the DMV, and it made it so difficult that they may not have an ID card. But over the course of 15 years where, you know, they've now proposed easy methods of getting an ID card, and I think demographics have changed over those years. I don't see it being any particular burden. So if that means it brings the parties together, excuse me, that we agree on that, I have no problem with that. I didn't need it yesterday, Bill. What I love, the only time I voted by mail was in 2020 because of COVID. What happened is I love going to the polls because there are I think it's six people there. I always take the time to thank them, you know, for their service as poll workers. One of them is my neighbor, who I don't see very often, but I can guarantee seeing him, you know, at the polls. I thank them for their work because we know how important it is. And, Bill, I keep making an offer, and they laugh and reject it. I've said for years, Bill, I would have no problem serving as a poll worker if I could come in at noon and work the second shift. Apparently, it doesn't work that way.
No.
You got to be there. I think they said their report time is like 6:30 in the morning. And I said, I know it's a great job, but I'm not functional. It probably mess things up. So I really do appreciate it. I think I've said this before at the last time we voted. I love the setup in Berks. The technology's working well. You know, you come in, I mentioned my name, didn't have to show any ID because they know me. Sign the poll book, you know, on their computer screen. You get a ballot, take it into the booth area there. They show you how to insert it into the machine, and then you see a listing of all the candidates. And I think you're probably not surprised to hear, when I get to the presidential race, as a proud Republican and never Trumper, I voted for Nikki Haley yesterday. Of course, she dropped out, but she was still on the ballot because of, you know, she hadn't dropped out at the time the ballots went to print. Actually, Bill, I probably mentioned 3 years ago, Mike Pence had been my first choice because of, one, he had legislative and executive experience, but more importantly to me, on January 6th, he did the right thing. So I voted for Nikki Haley, just like in 2016, John Kasich, former governor of Ohio, and in 2020, Bill Weld, former Republican governor of Massachusetts, was on the ballot. So, you know, I know I didn't win that one, but again, you express your opinions there as well. And then, Bill, you can see on the screen, verify your vote. You insert it into the machine, and you can actually see a paper or cardboard copy of your selections to verify that. So I always consider it great going to the polls, and just wanted to share that information with you as well. Okay?
Matt, before you hang up, how many voters were at the polling place?
Good point. A bad day, Bill. I went at 6 p.m. yesterday. I was voter number 183.
Wow.
So think about that. That's what, 12 to 15 votes you know, per hour there, which is pretty embarrassing. I think you introduced, you know, some of those figures. And other than the presidential one, I think the only race I had to choose from was for the Republican nomination for my state representative there. So a bad day for participation for sure.
Okay. Yeah, I definitely wouldn't want to be somebody down ballot
no,
running for office.
And again, that just happened. I think there were like a lot of names for committee membership and things along those lines. Now, a cynic would say this, Bill, such a poor turnout, does that mean my vote counted more? Because people weren't showing up. But good topic, sir. Have a good day.
All right, Matt, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. And you're listening to Feedback. We'll be back with more of this Wednesday edition of Your On Air Town Square in just a bit. Stay with us.
Serving Myerstown, Fredericksburg, Newmanstown, and all of Lebanon County. This is News Talk 830, WEEU.
And now back to Feedback with Bill Saunders on 830 WEEU, the voice of Berks and Beyond.
Welcome back to Feedback. You're on Air Town Square. You're on the voice of Berks and Beyond, 830 WEEU. Our phone numbers here are 610-374-8800 or toll-free, 888-401-0459. Well, some updates from the cases involving Donald Trump comes this from the Washington Times. The former president was advised that he should return the classified documents kept in his Mar-a-Lago estate almost a year before the FBI conducted its search. This according to new court filings. An associate of Mr. Trump, only identified as person 16 in these filings from the classified documents case, that were unsealed on Monday, by the way, told the former president in 2021 to give it all back. Whatever you have, give everything back, this person told him. Let them come here and get everything. Don't give them a noble reason to indict you, because they will. Again, this is a person identified as person 16 told the FBI that this is what he or she said to Donald Trump nearly a year before the search of Mar-a-Lago. The associate, who refused to have the interview recorded in fear of the Trump world, said Mr. Trump responded with a weird, "You're the man" type of response. The Trump associate also suggested that one of the former president's children was asked to persuade Trump to give the documents back. The associate mentioned that Walt Nauta, Mr. Trump's former valet, who allegedly helped move boxes of classified documents, was told by those close to Trump that the classified documents investigation was, quote, politically motivated and much ado about nothing. Well, Mr. Nauta was also told that if he got charged with lying to the FBI, Mr. Trump would pardon him after he's elected president again. Mr. Nauta is charged with 6 counts, including conspiracy to obstruct justice. Trump's legal team has tried to argue that he cannot be prosecuted for having the documents in his Mar-a-Lago home because they were considered his personal property under the Presidential Records Act. U.S. District Court Judge Eileen Cannon rejected that claim earlier this month, and she was appointed to her position by Donald Trump. And then there is this, a new charge that the New York prosecutors have revealed in the hush money case against the former president. Forgive my voice again. I'm losing it because of my tremors. So forgive me if my voice cuts out on me every once in a while here. But this I got from Fox News. New York prosecutors on Tuesday revealed the other crime they alleged that former President Trump was trying to conceal when he allegedly falsified his business records. Manhattan's district attorney, Alvin Bragg, charged Trump with 34 counts of falsifying business records in the first degree. For prosecutors to secure a criminal conviction, they must convince the jury that Trump committed the crime of falsifying business records in furtherance of another crime. Trump has pleaded not guilty to all 34 of those counts. Well, New York prosecutor Joshua Steinglass on Tuesday said the other crime, this new one, is a violation of a new New York law called conspiracy to promote or prevent election. Prosecutors will try to prove that the alleged conspiracy was to conceal a conspiracy to unlawfully promote his candidacy. Are you following along with me on this? Because it's all totally confusing here. Any two or more persons who conspire to promote or prevent the election of any person to a public office by unlawful means and which conspiracy is acted upon by one or more of the parties thereto shall be guilty of a misdemeanor. This according to the New York law 17-152. That's how it reads. Well, prosecutor Michael Colangelo, the guy who worked for the DOJ, Biden's DOJ, and then left that cushy position to go work for the Manhattan District Attorney's Office and is now the main prosecutor in this case, or one of the main prosecutors in this hush money case, said during his opening argument on Monday, the case against Trump, quote, is about a criminal conspiracy and a cover-up. Colangelo argued that months after Trump announced his candidacy for president in June of 2015, he invited former CEO of American Media, David Pecker, to Trump Tower for a meeting. His then attorney and alleged fixer, Michael Cohen, was also at that meeting. AMI, which is the American Media Incorporated, owned the National Enquirer. Those three men formed a conspiracy to influence the election, Colangelo argued. Colangelo alleged that Cohen paid Daniels $130,000 to silence her and make sure the public did not learn of an alleged sexual encounter with Trump. Colangelo says that after the election, Trump reimbursed Cohen through a series of monthly checks from his businesses, but disguised those transactions as payments for legal services. Colangelo alleged that Pecker, Cohen, and Trump conspired to influence the 2016 presidential election. Oh, my goodness, keeping something out of the media. Like other politicians haven't done that. And Colangelo says Pecker would gather harmful information and prevent it from going public. Colangelo alleged he only published flattering stories about Trump and negative stories about opponents. Well, one of these days, maybe we should compare media coverage of the Republicans to that of the Democrats on MSNBC, CNN, NBC, CBS, ABC, New York Times, Washington Post, you name it. I think you'll find a difference there. The prosecutor said the men used a practice called catch and kill. Wow, that sounds criminal. Saying they bought damaging information, had the seller of that information sign a non-disclosure agreement, and then block the information from being published. Colangelo says the practice was used three times. One was to block a story that a former Trump Tower doorman was trying to sell about an alleged out-of-wedlock child. Colangelo said the payment was $30,000. The doorman's story was eventually proven to be untrue. The next payment was to former Playboy model Karen McDougal, who claimed a romantic and sexual relationship with Trump. Colangelo alleged that Cohen asked AMI to buy the story. Colangelo said AMI paid McDougal $150,000 in exchange for unlimited life rights to her story. Colangelo also alleged there was a $130,000 payment made to Daniels. He further alleged that when it came time to pay Cohen back, Trump didn't negotiate the price down, he doubled it. Colangelo says that his willingness to do this shows the importance of hiding the payments and alleged overall election conspiracy. But Trump's defense attorney, Todd Blanche, rejected the prosecution's argument, saying President Trump is innocent. None of this was a crime, Blanche said. People say that Trump is trying to cover up payments. President Trump did not pay Cohen back $130,000. He paid Cohen $420,000. He added, would a frugal businessman repay a $130,000 debt to the tune of $420,000? Blanche says the money was not a payback and that Trump in 2017, after the election, was paying legal fees. He added, I have a spoiler alert. There is nothing wrong with trying to influence an election. It's called democracy. They put something sinister on it, meaning the prosecution team. Blanche argued that Cohen, paying Daniels, was not illegal, and entering into a non-disclosure agreement was also not illegal, saying companies do that all the time. There's nothing illegal about it, Blanche said, arguing that Daniels was attempting to try to embarrass Trump with all sorts of allegations that could be damaging to him and damaging to his family. Trump fought back to protect his family, reputation, and brand, Blanche said, and that is not a crime. All right, so I'll leave it up to you to decide how this case goes and what you think is true and what's not true. With that, we'll take a break and we'll be back with more feedback in just a bit. Stay with us.
Weather and traffic.
It's a source I can trust.
A new generation of talk. News Talk 830 WEEU.
Almost every evening on the news, we hear about a home or business that has sustained a fire, flood, or some other disaster that disrupts lives in a tragic way. What would you do if this happened to you? Hi, this is Skip Bell of Service Master Restore. We have been restoring properties and peace of mind since 1994. For emergency cleanup, restoration, and reconstruction services, call Service Master Restore at 610-374-1881. Service Master, Masters of Service, serving the Master.
PA 4208.
Attention, Berks County residents. Berks County Medical Society, in partnership with Berks County District Attorney, SOS Berks, and the Reading Fightin' Phils, invite you to a drive-up prescription drug take-back event. Saturday, April 27th from 8 to 11 a.m. Visit us at First Energy Stadium on Front Street in Reading to safely dispose of your unused or expired medications. The first 5,000 attendees will receive free Reading Fightin' Phils tickets. For more information, visit BerksCMS.org. That's BerksCMS.org.
When it comes to addiction, every second counts. Today, there's hope. Berks County residents have access to free Narcan and safe, affordable options for drug and alcohol treatment. Order an opioid overdose reversal kit. Find treatment. Or learn more by visiting the Council on Chemical Abuse website, cocaberks.org/hope. That's cocaberks.org/hope for more information. Or call 610-376-8669 to learn more. Paid for with Pennsylvania taxpayer dollars. And that's a wrap for hour number two of this Wednesday edition of Feedback. Coming up in hour number three, I'll be joined by some folks from Safe Berks as we talk about services that they provide to victims of sexual assault and domestic violence, as April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month, and they'll be taking your calls. So stay with us for hour number three of Feedback here on the Voice of Berks and Beyond, 830 WEEU. Welcome back as we kick off the third and final hour of Feedback. You're on air Town Square here on the Voice of Berks and Beyond, 830 WEEU. Good morning, everyone. I'm Bill Saunders along with Sean Tansky. And our phone numbers here are 610-374-8800 or toll free 888-401-0459. And our dedicated text line is 484-650-3373. Joining me this morning are a couple of folks from Safe Berks. And we're going to talk about Safe Berks and what they're all about in just a minute. But my guests this morning are Ashley Moyer and Megan Burrell, both co-directors of community programs and education for Safe Berks, and Mindy McIntosh, who's director of development. Ladies, good morning. Welcome to Feedback.
Good morning.
Good morning.
It's good to have you with us today. And April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month. And so what I'd like to start off with is a brief overview, if you could, about what Safe Berks is all about. And I understand that the group's name wasn't always Safe Berks, was it? It had recently changed? And go over that as well for us.
Okay. So we used to be Berks Women in Crisis, and then we realized that we don't only serve women and that women are not the only people that might experience domestic violence or sexual assault. So Safe Berks is the agency, the only agency here in Berks County that supports survivors of both domestic violence and sexual assault. All of the services that we offer to survivors are completely free and completely confidential. So someone is able to access our 24-hour hotline at any time of day or night to speak with an advocate about some of the resources that we offer. But some of the other services that we offer are free counseling. We offer assistance with folks filing for protection orders, accompaniment to court. We have an attorney who represents people if she has availability in the final stages of that. We do a lot of outreach into the community, into schools to provide programming about what domestic violence and sexual assault are. We have 24-hour response to the hospitals or the healthcare facilities in Berks County to meet with survivors and connect them to resources. We also have a residential shelter for survivors who are actively fleeing domestic violence or sexual assault. The goal really is to try to support survivors in whatever stage they're in, whether that's choosing to report or maybe they're a survivor who's experienced abuse in the past and are now ready for resources. We're really kind of, again, willing to meet people where they're at and support them in whatever way they may need.
Okay, so now we're going to go through each of those services individually in greater detail in just a bit. But let's break this down. As far as sexual abuse is concerned, I understand from looking at your website that there are red flags that will indicate abuse. Can someone go over what those red flags are for me? Who wants to answer that? Anybody know?
Well, red flags are really just common things that you would see in a relationship that should be warning signs, right? So if you think of a traffic light, green, yellow, and red, red is that point where you're saying, stop. This is actually somewhere that you need to stop and reconsider what you're seeing and if this is healthy or unhealthy, to really protect yourself from becoming involved in an abusive relationship.
Okay. And do we have statistics or availability of statistics that you could tell me whether or not this is a serious issue here in Berks County? Is it a severe problem in Berks County?
So we don't necessarily have statistics for Berks County, but in relation to sexual assault in general, the most recent statistics say that over half of women and one in three men will experience sexual violence involving physical contact in their lifetime. And those are from the Center for Disease Control. So those numbers are significant. And I think domestic violence is one in three women and one in four men will experience, some sort of domestic violence within a relationship. So these numbers are significant for both of these things. I know we're focused more on sexual assault because it's Sexual Assault Awareness Month, but the prevalence is really high just in general. And there are also many people who choose not to report. So I feel like those numbers could even be higher, and we don't know.
Okay. And of course, as I said at the top of the hour here, that April is designated as Sexual Assault Awareness Month. What is the importance of designating a month to address this issue?
Well, the whole purpose of this month, it's a month-long campaign. Its goal is for individuals, but also organizations, to raise public awareness about sexual harassment, sexual assault, and sexual abuse, educating communities on what it looks like, but also how to prevent it.
Okay. Is there a theme that has been established for this month? And if so, what is that theme?
Yeah, so the theme for this year's Sexual Assault Awareness Month is building connected communities. Did you want to talk about that, Megan?
Sure. So one of the roles in our department, Ashley and my community programs and education department, is really to meet people where they are. So that really goes along with this theme. We are meeting students in schools. We are going to community partnerships in all parts of Berks County to connect with people in spaces they're already comfortable, like college campuses or Friend Inc. in Kutztown or Salvation Army in Hamburg. We're going to spaces that people may already frequent and already, again, feel safe visiting, and we're meeting people in spaces they're already comfortable and trying to not only raise that awareness, but get more people connected to resources if and when they would choose to access them. So to us, I think it isn't necessarily about getting a large number of people to use services, but the goal is for people to recognize that these services exist within their community, right? Information's power. So to be able to know, like, these are resources that exist here for me that are free, that are confidential, is really the goal of what we do. So I think that this theme for Sexual Assault Awareness Month is really not just lowering the stigma by having conversations about it, but it's, again, reinforcing that there are people here to help you if this is something you're experiencing and you want the support. So I think it's a really important theme, and we try to kind of live by that theme and work by that theme every day within our agency and within our department.
Now, you mentioned stigma. For someone who has experienced sexual assault, it must not be easy for them to come forward and say that they've been victimized in this way. So in what ways does Safe Berks help these people reach out to them, especially when we're talking about people who may not necessarily want to say that they have been a victim of sexual assault? How do you reach out to people like that?
And I think that's really also part of being in the spaces we're in, like on college campuses, in schools, in the community. We're not necessarily saying, hey, if you've experienced this, like, come use our services. We're explaining what resources are available. We operate off of an empowerment model. So our job isn't to tell people, you know, you need to access services or you need to report it, so that they understand their options. So to be in as many spaces as possible, just making sure people are aware, I think that's the first step. And then someone has to make the determination if it's what they want to access and when they want to access it. So I think it's giving people their power back by saying, here are your options. What do you want to do? Like, what steps do you want to take? If this is something you have experienced, if you're not interested in services, that's okay. But if you are, we're here to support you.
All right, let's talk further about the problem of sexual assault. Can you share with me be more specific with me as to some of the things that are being done to address the problem in Berks County specifically?
Well, I think it starts with prevention, right? Because we certainly don't want to tackle sexual assault after something has happened. Our goal is really to put those protective factors into place.
Mm-hmm.
So our team, our newly merged team, we start by spreading awareness in local school districts. Right now, we're implementing the Healthy Relationships Project. That's a pre-K through eighth grade curriculum where we're talking about things like empathy. We're talking about things like coping skills, feelings. Not all feelings come in the same way. Sometimes they feel really strong. Sometimes they're not so strong. And then how do you cope with what you're feeling in that moment? If you're having mixed feelings, if you're uncomfortable, hey, that's a feeling too. And that should be validated. And if you are in an uncomfortable situation, what are your resources? What do you do? But also, we're trying to train and educate adults on all of those same things, because it really is the adult's responsibility to protect the youth today. So if they have grown up or lived their life in a way that may have put them at risk for sexual assault, we're really trying to break that cycle and give them the support that they need to help their children and the next generation lead a healthy lifestyle and have healthy relationships.
Ashley, did I hear you right? Did you say that some of the education programs begin pre-K?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Wow. So let me delve into that for a little bit, because it's not just the actual person who has been assaulted who is the victim here, especially if there are children involved. Can you share with us what kind of impacts this could have on a child in a household?
Well, sure. I think witnessing domestic violence or sexual assault or being a part of the aftermath of the family structure within, you are involved. You're directly involved. And what you see in your household is normal to you. And until you know otherwise, that, hey, that may not be normal, or it's okay that made you feel uncomfortable, because you're right, that's not healthy. learning what healthy could be and who their trusted adults can be if they ever find themselves in a situation or they're witness to a situation where they may need help.
Anybody else want to contribute to that?
I do think that's, excuse me, I do think that's a hard question to answer because I also think each child is very different. We sometimes provide training to talk about like the responses to domestic violence and how it does, or sexual assault, how it might affect a child. And the answer really is each child's different. So it does depend on the support system they have at home, you know, who unfortunately was the one who was the perpetrator in the situation, how that affects their life. Because most often it is going to be someone they know, whether a family member, a friend, someone who has access to them. It's statistically less likely to be, it could be a stranger, but it's less likely. So it's not just about them reporting, but it's kind of what happens once in, if they choose to.
Okay.
So I think children are resilient, but again, it's going to depend on some of those protective factors and the support and guidance that they have once they report and what their experiences are like moving forward from there and how they heal. So I think it really does depend. That's a hard question to answer, I think.
All right. We welcome any listeners who might have a question about this topic today for my guests. Our numbers here are 610-374-8800 or toll free 888-401-0459. And you mentioned earlier a 24/7 hotline. Can you share with us what that number is?
Yeah. So the 24-hour hotline is 1-844-789-7233. Or if someone would prefer to text, they can text the word Safe Berks to 20121.
All right, and repeat that one more time before we go.
So the hotline number is 1-844-789-7233, or someone could text the word Safe Berks to, and they would text those words to the number 20121, so if they prefer to text.
My guests this morning are Ashley Moyer, Megan Burrell, and Mindy McIntosh, all three with Safe Berks here in Reading. We're going to take a break. We'll be back with more feedback on this Wednesday morning in just a bit. Stay with us.
Serving Barnesville, Schuylkill Haven, Tremont, and all of Schuylkill County, this is News Talk 830, WEEU.
The voice of Berks and Beyond.
Welcome back to Feedback. My guests this morning are Ashley Moyer, Megan Burrell, and Mindy McIntosh, all three with Safe Berks. And this month is Sexual Assault Awareness Month, and that's what we're talking about now. The next thing that I wanted to address with you regarding some of the services that Safe Berks offers, let's start with residential services. Can you share with me what that's all about?
Sure. So we do have a shelter for folks who are actively fleeing domestic violence and sexual assault. They would call that hotline number to speak with an advocate over the phone. They can ask any questions that they have, and then the advocate would do an assessment via phone, or if they would walk in, via walk-in. But someone would be able to stay with our shelter for a short period of time and would be able to work with the case manager, who could talk with them about their goals and kind of what they want to achieve during the time that they're there, and help them take steps forward, whatever that might look like for them. But the great thing about where the shelter is located is that it's in our building, so they would have access to other resources while they're staying there, such as counseling if they were interested, or legal, but everything's really accessible. And again, the goal would be that they feel supported while they're there, and so that they can take the next steps, whatever that looks like for them.
And they are safe from the abuser.
There's
no way the abuser can get to them.
We do have a lot of security cameras, and we have to be, you know, buzzed into the door and things. So we try to, you know, have measures. There's always staff there. We try to put measures in place so that people feel safe while they're staying there, and so that people are safe.
We also have panic buttons that go right to the police and fire, ambulance. So if we do have something going on, we have very quick access to the police.
Okay. And I also understand you accommodate pets. If victims of sexual assault or domestic violence, I'm seeing a shaking of the head.
We're working to be able to accommodate pets on like a greater level. But right now we do have some local relationships with other programs within Berks County and other like shelters and facilities. So if someone would want to come into the shelter, or a survivor would be going to stay with a family member or a friend where they might not be able to take their pet with them, we have some partnerships that we could try to connect that survivor to see if the pet could be boarded during the time of coming to either our shelter, or again staying with someone where maybe they, you know, wouldn't necessarily be able to bring their pet with them. So along with that, because we've seen this as a huge barrier as to why people don't want to leave. They don't want to leave their pets. So we've been, which is understandable. So we've been able to, you know, provide them with other additional supports that the pets might need, such as food or leashes or beds. We also have some support for any medical care they might need. So we're trying to provide that wraparound service so that they feel safe and supported going to a new safe space and knowing that their pets are also safe.
And how about children?
So children are able to come into the shelter with their parents.
Okay.
They do have to be supervised by their parents, but they are able to. We do accept children with their parents when they would come stay at the shelter.
All right. So how does this work when someone comes into the secure facility? Do you help them move out of the house that they are in with the abuser? Do you help them get to the safe house, or do they come to you? How does this work?
Most people are coming to us, sometimes from another program, sometimes from the hospital, sometimes, you know, just with what they have, the clothes off their back. It's really dependent. We don't often help people move out of where they're coming.
Okay.
Often people do find us, but we could provide transportation if someone would need to come from somewhere else to our shelter. We do have resources to hopefully be able to help with that in certain circumstances. But most often we don't have a lot of space for people to bring all of their belongings. Most people aren't coming with very much, which we do have things, and Mindy really helps with helping survivors get some of the things that they might need that they don't have, but most people aren't coming in with a lot of belongings.
We do have a donation room that has some clothing. We try to have a couple outfits of every size. We have personal care items. When people come in, we give them a welcome bag that has a pillow, a blanket, a towel, sheet set, and when they leave with all of that. So we do get donations in, and we do supply our survivors with whatever they need. And we also partner a lot of times with New Journey Community Outreach.
Okay.
We might give them a couple outfits, but if they need more clothes, we can give them a voucher for New Journey, and New Journey will help them out. Or they might give us clothes for our donation room if we're down a certain size or if we need something. So we work with a lot of different community organizations. But like Megan said, sometimes people come just with whatever they're wearing. So they need pajamas, they need underwear, they need socks, they need clothes, you know, toothbrush, they need all that stuff. So we try to keep at least some of everything in stock so we can give it as needed.
Is it a situation where a police officer responding to an incident would bring the victim to you? Is that typically how it works?
It could be, but again, people come in all different ways. So again, some people might come from, you know, the hospital. Some people may come from a police. Some people might walk in on their own or call and set, and they do their intake or their assessment on the phone, and it's determined they're able to come in, and then they may come in. So it's dependent on each person's situation. We see people come in a variety of ways.
Gotcha.
But that hotline number, as if you're a survivor who wants to access services, that would be the number that really anyone would, that's the number the hospital calls, that would be the number law enforcement would call. That's really the number that you get connected to someone as quick as possible.
I want to talk a little bit about law enforcement. How informed are they on this issue, do you think?
We work fairly closely we try to work with all the jurisdictions. We have a program called the Lethality Assessment Program that is specifically for domestic violence. But what it is it's a screen that officers are able to use when they respond to a domestic incident. And there is it has to be intimate partner, and they're aware of who might be the perpetrator and who is the victim. They're able to then ask the victim a set of questions, and those questions basically determine the likelihood of lethality for that survivor. So the police will ask all the questions, and then dependent on the person's answers, or if the officer just has a belief that they could benefit from services, in that moment they're able to call our hotline number and get connected to an advocate for that survivor to talk to right in that exact moment.
Okay.
So that's something that we utilize. We do provide some training to law enforcement otherwise about sexual assault and domestic violence. Survivors are able to have an advocate with them during the law enforcement interview or at court. So it's definitely, I mean, we're interacting with one another very mm-hmm. often. I also oversee the sexual assault response team, and law enforcement are members of that team. So we have meetings quarterly to talk about what we can best do to support survivors of sexual assault through every single system. So okay. that would include members from the district attorney's office, the sexual assault nurses, the SANE nurses at the hospitals that perform the sexual assault exams and collect evidence. That would be members of law enforcement, and then victim advocates and victim witness coordinators at the DA's office. So our goal really is for all of those people to be at the table, including members of the district attorney's office. I don't know if I said that. So we all kind of meet quarterly and really talk about what we can do to best support survivors, what can be done better, what we're doing really well, so that that person feels supported. The goal is that person feels supported every step of the way.
Gotcha.
Even if, you know, there's a determination that charges are not going to be filed, the person can still access services and can still feel supported through every system. That's really the goal.
Megan, earlier you mentioned that you also provide legal services. Can you share with us what that entails? Can you give us a little more detail on that?
Sure. So we have legal advocates who are able to accompany folks to any civil hearing related to, you know, protection from abuse, sexual violence protection order, or protection from intimidation order. The advocates are able to assist people through the filing process and also accompany them to court for, usually there's a temporary and then a final hearing. We also have an attorney who represents people at the final hearing if she has the availability to do so. And these advocates are also able to accompany survivors to report to police sometimes they do follow-up interviews. So if that person wants an advocate with them, that's something that they can do as well. So again, the goal is for that person to feel supported every step of the way. And we all kind of have a role to play in that. Mm-hmm. So that's what they do. They're really, really present at the courthouse. We also have advocates in the evenings. We call it our rapid response program every single night from 7 p.m. to midnight to assist folks coming in to file for emergency protection orders. We're able to really explain what that process looks like, assist with the paperwork, provide support, and then connect them to our resources and any other community resources that they may need. So that happens at the courthouse as well in the evenings.
And all of this is free?
All of it is free and confidential.
All right. How do you folks get your funding? Anybody want to address that?
Funding is a unique topic. Our funding actually continues to go down, believe it or not. And we've tried to develop some unique ways to keep our donation room full and to keep funds rolling in. One thing that we've done this month is start a teal ribbon campaign. So if you have visited local businesses across Berks County, you may notice that there's some teal ribbons hanging within their place of business. And we thank them.
I could list them.
Yeah.
Why Missing Restaurant and Bakery, Anna Marie's on Main in Birdsboro, Albright College Bookstore, all Baja Beach tanning locations, a couple stands at the Shillington Farmers Market, and Paisley and Company in Kutztown. This is our first year doing it, and we plan to make it even bigger next year, but we were just kind of starting with a few. And all of these are listed on our website. We've been taking pictures at the different places and posting them, and we're very grateful for these few organizations, places that are doing it, and we do plan to expand each year.
Anybody who's listening now who wants to donate to the cause, can they do so directly, and if so, how?
You could donate on our website if you want to donate directly to Safe Berks. If you wanted to purchase one of these paper teal ribbons that you write your name on, you'd have to go to one of those places. But in addition, for Sexual Assault Awareness Month, we are trying to get 250 birdies purchased for our survivors. And a birdie is a personal safety device. It's just a small, almost like the size of an inhaler type thing. And you pull the top off, and it's a very loud alarm type sound. So if somebody's in a parking lot or if somebody just doesn't feel safe, that gets a lot of attention. They're $30 each, and we're trying to raise enough money to buy 250 of them that we could give to all of our survivors, whether they're ones who live in the safe house, people on college campuses, people using our counseling services, whatever it might be. But so that is part of our Teal Ribbon campaign or sexual assault awareness campaign, I'll say.
And you mentioned counseling services. Can we real quick, before we lose Megan here, can we real quick go over what the counseling services are that Safe Berks offers?
Sure. So we offer empowerment counseling. So it's a little bit different than maybe what you'd see going to a therapeutic or clinical counseling. Our counselors do a wonderful job, and they do 12 sessions with survivors, usually very focused on goal planning, safety planning, and really assisting, again, that survivor in taking steps forward. It's, again, completely free. We're able to get people scheduled quite quickly. They offer it virtually or in person. So it's more accessible to people, but they would simply call if they were interested in counseling. They could call our main number, which is 610-373-1206. And the extension for counseling is 606. And the extension for legal, I didn't mention it earlier, is 107. So they could call our main number to get connected to those resources. The counselors also offer groups on like a rotating basis, depending on the needs that they see come up as survivors. So if someone would be interested in a group, that's also something that we offer so that they maybe feel some support from other survivors or other people who might understand their experiences. It might be a great support for them. So
are the counseling services just for the victims, or are they also available for the abuser?
So we don't offer services at this point for abusers or perpetrators. However, we do offer, and this is something important, people who are considered secondary survivors. So it doesn't need to just be the person who's experienced the abuse. It can also be other people that are affected by it, because it doesn't just affect the person experiencing it. It does affect children. It does children of, you know, seeing a domestic violence relationship or a family member of someone who experienced sexual assault. So it's not just, again, for the people that have experienced abuse, but it's for people considered secondary survivors, because they're also affected by it. We offer counseling to anyone. So.
Gotcha. Okay. And we're going to take a break here, and we're going to lose Megan Burrell because she's got another commitment that she has to get off to. And Megan, thank you for sharing your time with us this morning. But before we go into our commercial break, share with us toll-free hotline and the web address, if you would.
Sure. So it's 1-844-789-7233. That's the hotline number and the text line, you said?
The text line and also your web address.
Okay. So the text line is, you would text the word Safe Berks with no spaces to 20121. And I believe our website's just www.safeberks.org.
Okay. Very good. We're going to take a break, and we welcome anybody who has a question for my guest this morning. We have a few more minutes left of this hour, and your questions are always welcome at 610-374-8800 or toll-free 888-401-0459. We'll take a break. We'll be back with more of Feedback in just a bit. Stay with us.
Serving Tamaqua, Pottsville, Pine Grove, and all of Schuylkill County. This is News Talk 830 WEEU.
And now back to Feedback with Bill Saunders on 830 WEEU, the voice of Berks and beyond.
Welcome back to Feedback. Our phone numbers again are 610-374-8800 or toll-free 888-401-0459. April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month, and we're joined this morning by Ashley Moyer and Mindy McIntosh, both with Safe Berks here in Reading. Their main office location, by the way, is at 255 Chestnut Street in Reading, and their main number is 610-373-1206. And I want to talk a little bit about community outreach at this point, some events that you folks are holding. And one of the things that I wanted to talk about was a program called Walk for No More. What is that all about?
Our Walk for No More is our annual, it's a community awareness event. It's not necessarily a fundraising event, but it happens the morning of Art on the Avenue, which is Saturday, June 15th. We do it in Wyomissing at the Sly Fox Complex. We gather around 9 o'clock in the morning. We give out two awards, which is called our Voices for Change Awards, for two organizations that not just help Safe Berks, but the whole community. I'm excited to announce that this year's award winners are BCTV and Wyomissing Restaurant and Bakery. Both are great organizations that help Safe Berks a lot and, again, do wonderful things in the community. So that morning, which is Saturday, June 15th, we will gather at the Sly Fox Complex. We're going to be in the front, the back, the whole part of it, because we've had so many people there last year that we don't just fit in the back area, which is where they gave us last year. And we will award our Voices for Change winners. We'll talk about Safe Berks, what's going on. We usually have a survivor share. And then we have signs that are, some people bring their own signs. We have some signs that are made, you know, love shouldn't hurt, and no more domestic violence, no more sexual assault, more love, more peace, more kindness. And then we gather and we walk from Sly Fox down to Penn Avenue and then down to the 400 block of Penn Avenue. So it's while Art in the Avenue is being set up. So there's lots of people by their tables, lots of people see what's going on. Every participant gets a free event t-shirt as long as you register ahead of time.
Okay.
If we have more, we'll give them out that day. But you could register on our website for free. We encourage people to get teams together and then invite your friends to your team. We're going to have a prize for the first time this year. The team that raises the most amount of money will win a pool party from the Reading Phillies up to a $500 value.
Nice.
So that will be awarded. I'm not 100% sure if we're going to award it that day or maybe just a few days later, because some money still comes in. But it definitely will be for the team who gets the most amount of money. And it's just a great awareness event. Kids come. You could bring your dog. You can't be inside the Sly Fox Complex, but we'll have speakers outside so you can hear, and then you could walk with us. The YMCA and the West Reading Police Departments are great, helping us, you know, cross the streets and just kind of, you know, be prepared for us. And then we will have a table all day at Art on the Avenue. We'll have information about our summer camp, information about our program services, how people can volunteer, get involved. It's a great day, and it just starts off with a great gathering at our Walk for No More.
And Mindy, when exactly in June is this going to be?
Saturday, June 15th, and it's from 9 a.m. to, let's say, 10:30 a.m. Art on the Avenue starts at 11. We are done by then. So we're kind of finishing up and walking through Penn Avenue just as Art on the Avenue is starting.
And are registrations being taken now?
Yes, on our website, which is safeberks.org. And then if you go on events and news, I think it says, and then Walk for No More. And it's free to do a team. You could join a team we already have. There's a list of the teams, which there's not too many yet, but you can create your own team, and then you can invite your friends to join you. And like I said, the winner who raises the most amount of money will get up to a $500 value Reading Phillies pool party.
Nice. And Mindy, toward the beginning of this hour, you mentioned the Teal Ribbon campaign. Is there a significance to the color teal in reference to this topic?
Teal is the color for Sexual Assault Awareness Month. I don't know, Ashley, if we know why it's teal, but I know teal is for Sexual Assault Awareness Month, which is April, and then purple is for Domestic Violence Awareness Month, which is October. Other than it being my favorite color, personally, I'm not really sure why teal. Do you know, Ashley?
And the ribbon campaign takes place throughout the month of April?
The whole month of April, people can buy the paper ribbons, and then we also have cloth ribbons that are like pins that are given out, and we have them at different places as well, or we give them out to different organizations. So if anybody is interested in getting teal ribbons, we'll gladly give them out. And a lot of times when we go to events, we hand them out as well.
And go over again how people can get those teal ribbons.
If you want to get the paper ones that you purchase for a dollar with your name on it, it is YMCA Restaurant and Bakery, Anna Marie's on Main in Birdsboro, Albright College Bookstore, all Baja Beach tanning locations, a couple areas in the Shillington Farmers Market, and Paisley and Company in Kutztown.
Okay. Educational webinars. Tell me a little bit about that.
So each week in the month of April, the community educators are pushing out educational webinars surrounding topics of sexual violence, because this year's theme is building connected communities.
Okay.
It's all the ways that you can stand up against sexual violence or be a positive bystander in different community roles. So as a friend or as a neighbor, as a caregiver, as a student. And so if you would like to view any of those webinars, they're free. They're released weekly in English every Tuesday and in Spanish every Thursday. They're about 5 to 10 minutes each, so it's not a super long watch, but there's very useful tips within each.
Now, what is, I noticed in notes that you sent to me in advance of today's interview, the word camp appears on the notes. Can you share with me, well, what is that all about?
Yeah, so if you're coming to the Walk for No More, visit the Safe Berks table because we will have a camp raffle basket, really just to draw families toward the table and let them know that camp is happening this summer. It's a free social justice camp.
Oh,
it's called Camp Safe Berks. And it's typically been run in years past, but last year we opened up for a younger age group as well for Camp Safe Berks Junior. So Camp Safe Berks Junior is for ages 10 through 13. Camp Safe Berks is for ages 13 through 17. They're held on two different weeks, always in the month of July. Camp Safe Berks Junior takes place right after the 4th of July week. So that first full week afterward, this year it's July 8th to July 12th. And Camp Safe Berks will be running from July 22nd to July 26th. It's being held this year at Alvernia University. It's completely free. Like I said, we will pick campers up from their house through the BCIU. We offer bus transportation at no cost. We bring them to Alvernia University. They get to eat breakfast and lunch and snack on the college campus. All activities are included.
Oh, wow.
We invite camp presenters, so local community organizations come and really... We ask for volunteers. It's a great week of fun, a great way for teens to come together and talk about things that they're seeing in their neck of the woods, issues of injustice, and those that want to make a difference and change the world, how they can come together to do those things with support.
Are there any other events that I did not ask you about that you'd like to include here today?
We had an event in February that I'd just like to share. We expanded our Celebration of Peace, which is our big fundraising event. And this year we had Troy Vincent, who is a former Philadelphia Eagle player. And he's the current executive vice president of the NFL for player relations. He grew up in a domestic violence situation. Unfortunately, several members of his family have gone through domestic violence situations. And him and his wife, Tommy, started a foundation and they talk against domestic violence. And he was our speaker and he did a fantastic job. He talked about the importance of getting men involved. Women can't fight the fight alone. And obviously men are victims as well. That's why we did change our name years ago from Berks Women in Crisis to Safe Berks, because we don't just serve women. And what does that mean by in crisis? So we serve any survivor of domestic violence or sexual assault in Berks County. And it's important to get the word out to men that need our services or to get more men involved. So very happy to say that we've had some men reach out to us since the event and have become more donors, development committee members, volunteers, just getting more involved in general. We have a new position for a male advocate. That's just kind of starting right now. So we're working on a lot of different initiatives, but he really helped get the word out to the community. And we're just very happy about that. We're starting to plan next year's event. We don't have a date or a speaker yet, but stay tuned because once all that's confirmed, we'll start getting words out about that. Most of our fundraising, at least the annual fundraising, we have annual sponsors, which is what helps our events. So our fiscal year is from July 1st to June 30th. So our annual sponsors are who help us put on these events, the Walk for No More and the Celebration of Peace. And we will be soliciting for new sponsors starting in July. So again, we'll be getting the word out on our website, social media. We'll be sending letters out. If anybody's interested in donating, becoming a sponsor, has a raffle item, whatever it might be, they could gladly reach out to me. They could go through our website. It'll get right to me as well. But we're always looking for community support, community participation. It takes a village, so we need a little bit of everybody's help to continue our mission.
All right, we got just a few seconds left here. Share with us again the phone number and website for Safe Berks.
It's 844-789-7233, which is also SAFE, S-A-F-E. So 844-789-SAFE. Or you could text Safe Berks to 20121. And our website is safeberks.org.
I want to thank my guests this morning, Ashley Moyer, Mindy McIntosh, and Megan Burrell, all with Safe Berks, for being with me today. Ladies, thank you so much. Appreciate your time today.
Thank you, Bill.
All right. Thank you.
Have a good day. We'll be back with the final seconds of feedback in just a bit. Stay with us.
That matter to me.
A new generation of talk. News Talk 830 WEEU.
And that wraps up today's edition of Feedback. You're on air Town Square. We'll do it again tomorrow. Want to thank everyone who shared their opinions with us, because you folks are the stars of the show. And I appreciate you sharing your opinions with us. I want to thank my producer, Sean Tansky. Thank you, buddy.
No problem, Bill.
And I also want to thank my executive producer, Daryl Berger. Today. So keep it here on the Voice of Berks and Beyond, 830 WEEU. And until tomorrow, make it a great rest of your day today. That'll do it for this episode of Feedback. To comment on the show, you can email us at feedback@830weeu.com. You can also hear our show live from 9 a.m. to noon Eastern Time at 830weeu.com or on the TuneIn app. For producer Sean Tansky, I'm Bill Saunders. Thanks for listening.